Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Someone gave me a question yesterday, two questions on a piece of paper, but it wasn't signed. I forget who gave it to me. Okay, put your name on it. I know I remember the questions, but I remember. When was what? Why don't you go to my desk and get the piece of paper? Sukadeva Goswami, after defining the 10 topics, was talking about, in order to identify who this Ashraya is, he's talking about the three kinds of Purusha, or the three concepts of person, the Adhyatmika, Adhidaivika, and Adhibhautika, the individual soul, the demigods who control his material existence, and the material body that's required in order to have that material life. And the point was made in 59, thank you, that you need all three of these participants in material existence, otherwise the other three cannot function. Other two cannot function. Eliminate any of the three, and the whole system breaks down. Now, that different person, other than all three, the one who knows all three perfectly, is the Ashraya. He's the supreme soul, and he's his own shelter. He's the shelter of everything else, but he's only sheltering himself. He doesn't have any other shelter. So that's a good definition of the Ashraya. Now, the question was, this sounds like we're identifying, I said that this is impersonal. I didn't mean that it was completely impersonal. The conception of Brahman without features is completely impersonal. The conception of Bhagawan with his transcendental activities and his loving relationship with his devotees and his beautiful personality, that's completely personal. In between, you have degrees of personality and impersonality. So you could say the super soul is, we'll say, one-third impersonal. Well, let's make the super soul two-thirds impersonal. He doesn't do anything. He's present in a personal form, but he doesn't do anything beside witnessing and sanctioning. So that's less personal. A little more personal is the Purusha avatar. He's an incarnation, but all he does is create material world. He doesn't have any pleasure pastimes, apparently, except for sleeping. That's his pleasure pastime. But he doesn't, sleeping is not doing much. At least we don't see much. He's doing something in his sleep, but we don't see it. We don't see his enjoyment with his pleasure potency. That's completely invisible in the Purusha avatar. So the Purusha avatar, let's say, is one-third impersonal, and the Supersoul is two-thirds impersonal, and Brahman is completely impersonal. I would look at it this way. And Jiva Goswami also shows that, I don't know if he gives the same, he doesn't give the same numbers, but he has the same hierarchy of degrees of removal from the supreme from the complete conception of the supreme person. That's what I meant. That there's a tendency toward wanting to see things less personally, and therefore, the concept of the Ashraya, just as the super soul, appeals to those who are less personally inclined. If you know that Krishna is the most beloved
and you have an intimate relationship with him, you don't need to meditate on how he's the Supersoul. You may do that, but you don't need to. It's not going to advance your spiritual life. But for those who cannot appreciate Krishna in a very personal way, it's very beneficial for them. It advances their spiritual life to meditate him on him as the Supersoul. That's less personal. Then there was another question about this. Prabhupada gave an unusual, in 2.10.1, translation of Nirodha. Instead of annihilation, he said going back home, back to Godhead. And actually, Prabhupada is not agreeing even with himself later in verse 7, where he translates it the ordinary way as annihilation. The same word, Nirodha, is discussed again in the 7th verse in the chapter. It's defined. And Prabhupada follows the ordinary definition in translating it. Dhammadapa, you've discovered in Balabhacharya's commentary something that sounds like what Prabhupada said. He translates Nirodha as Bhaktanam Prapancha Abhava, the absence or elimination of the material existence of the devotees. That's equivalent to going back home, back to Godhead. Yes, but I've never seen, as far as I know, Prabhupada ever cite Balabhacharya's commentary anywhere in his purports or use his commentary. I think that's just a coincidence. I don't think Prabhupada would have taken it from Balabhacharya. Well, okay, maybe this one time Prabhupada picks something from Balabhacharya, incorporates it without saying that he took it from Balabha. That's possible. It's just possible Prabhupada's eye just fell on that part of the page and he picked it up. But normally Prabhupada doesn't use Balabhacharya. There are a lot of, I won't dare to criticize the great Acharya, but he has a lot of peculiar ideas that are not found in our Siddhanta. Let's just put it like that. And so we generally don't even consult his commentary. Yes? This is a question. Okay. Yes. Seventh.
Nirodha is explained in the sixth verse of this chapter, 2.10.6.
2.10, yeah, right, and there Prabhupada follows the standard.
And the verse says, Nirodhos Yanusha Yanam. In other words, even Shekadeva Goswami doesn't explain annihilation as annihilation proper. He explains it as the going of the living entities back to Mahavishnu. And from that point of view, even though Mahavishnu is not exactly...
Going to sleep in Mahavishnu... You're taking that as going back to Godhead?
I mean, it's a far-fetched, of course. It's a kind of a far-stretched explanation, but even Shukadeva Goswami seems to depart from that clear-cut and dictionary definition of annihilation as explaining that jivas actually go to sleep in Mahavishnu,
which is going back to Godhead in a sense. First of all, there are four different kinds of annihilation. That is one of them. When the end of the universe comes and everybody who's left... The material world has to go to sleep inside Mahavishnu. So that is one of the four kinds of standard annihilation. And it would be pretty far-fetched to call that going back home, back to Godhead. That kind of going back home, back to Godhead, you can't stay there. You have to come back again. You have to wake up when Mahavishnu wakes up. The living entities don't attain liberation by merging into the body of Mahavishnu at the destruction of the universe. That doesn't happen.
But the fourth kind of annihilation, atyantika, is going back to Godhead proper, is it?
Yeah, but I... No, it's just liberation. It might be impersonal liberation.
I think it's...
So it's only one of the four kinds, and it's only one variety of that one of the four kinds. So it's unusual to give that as a general definition of Nirodha, going back home, back to Godhead. Prabhupada took that poetic liberty in the first verse. But he doesn't do it again in the sixth verse. Okay? Yeah. Now we're getting into a whole question session. A point, okay. Yeah. Yes. Prabhupada 11 times elsewhere, all together in the Bhagavatam, translated as annihilation. Anyway, it's a liberty. Let's describe it to poetic license and just leave it. All right, we were still summarizing where we are. So there was some discussion. We want to understand how these three purushas are dependent on one another, these three so-called purushas, the Jatvagati, Bhautagati, Daivika. So in order to help us, Jiva Goswami analyzes these two verses. Spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, the Adibhautik is the physical body, and that's identified in the Taittiriya Upanishad, Sava Esha Purusha Anarasa Mayaha. The first concept of the Purusha, the grossest one, the most material one, is the physical body, which is made of food and vital fluids. That's a kind of purusha. But the spirit's soul is the real living person, and the ashraya is the supreme spirit soul who completely knows everything about all three purushas. Jiva doesn't know everything. He knows something. Okay, that leads us up to text 60, which continues to analyze these two verses. We're not done with them. 60 says, Ekam ekatara bhave ityesham anyonya sapeksha siddhatvain anashrayatvam darshayati. The words, quote, in the absence of any of these, indicate that none of these are the ashraya, because the appearance of each depends on the others. Ashraya, swashraya, ashraya. The ashraya, the real ashraya, is his own shelter. He's not dependent on any of the anything else. So these other three purushas, you may want to call each or all of them ashraya, but they're not independent. Each one of them depends on the other two for their very manifestation. Okay, so there, that rules out that they're the ashraya. In order to define something, you have to distinguish it from everything else. So the three purushas are not the ashraya. The supreme soul, who is his own shelter and the shelter of everything else, he's the ashraya. Continuing the text, Tatahi drishyam vina tat pratityanumeyam karanam nasidyati napi drashta na cha tad vina karana pravityanumeyas tad ani adishtata suryadir na cha tam vina karanam pravartate na cha tad vina drishyam it ekatarasya bhava ekam nopalabhamahe. Okay, thus, for example, without a visible object, the sense whose existence is inferred by its perception of that object is not manifested. Okay, this means two things, that the sense cannot be perceived. First of all, the senses are very subtle. By ordinary, you can't, with the senses, perceive the senses. The senses are subtle. They're beyond perception of the ordinary senses. You can perceive the eyeball, but you cannot see or touch the sense of sight. That's a subtle organ. We infer its presence by the fact that something is being seen. The perception of something visible, that you experience directly. You cannot deny that. You can deny that you can think everyone else in the world is blind. But you know that you're seeing things. You cannot deny that. That proves that there must be a sense of sight. By definition, the sense of sight is what allows you to see things. So it's inferred by its result.
So, if there wasn't an object to see, you could not infer the presence of the object of sight. You couldn't know it. It's not manifest in the sense of not being known. But also, it would not basically exist. The sense of sight cannot be a sense of sight unless there's something to see. So not only it can't be known, it can't function as a sense of sight without having an object of perception. Okay, now, nor is the seer. So the sense of sight cannot be known and actually cannot exist as the sense of sight without an object to be seen. And also the seer. The living entity is there, but he's not a seer unless he sees something. There must be something to see. Otherwise, he's not a seer. He may be something, but he's not a seer. He's not the knower, the subject of the action of seeing, unless he has a thing to see. And without the sense and the seer, there is no presiding deity, such as the sun god, to be known by inference from the activity of the sense. Now, you don't see the demigods. Most people don't see them. Ordinary people don't see the demigods. But you can infer that here I am and I'm seeing something. It's not by my power. There must be some more powerful being who is allowing me to see. It's not just me and the physical apparatus. There must be some higher intelligent control that's allowing this to happen. Because someone else with a set of senses is blind. Why is one person blind and another one have good sight? There's higher control that dictates this. Higher intelligence. That's the demigod. His presence is inferred by the result. That things are done under control, not just mechanically or accidentally. Okay, my computer is trying to hibernate. For no good reason. I have to wake it up. Hold on. Yeah, let me borrow yours for a minute. I don't know what's going on here. Maybe you can try to get mine awake. See if you can get this back to life. May have to reboot it. I don't know. Do you like all those squiggles? You like all these wiggly lines? I don't know how to do that. You want me to do it? Well, okay. You go into options and you turn off. What it's doing is checking the spelling. So you turn off the spell in option, tools options, you turn off spelling check. Automatic spelling check, you turn that off. And without the sense and the seer, there is no presiding deity such as the sun god to be known by inference from the activity of the sense. So he's not sun god, his presence can't be known unless you're seeing something. Then you can infer that he must be there because you're able to see something. And also, if there's nobody seeing anything, if either there's no seers or there's no object seen anywhere, then that jiva who's supposed to be the sun god is out of business. He has nothing to do, so he can't be the sun god. Okay. Moreover, without the presiding deity, the sense does not function. And without the functioning of that sense, nothing becomes an object of sight. Okay, deity. Suppose the deity goes on a vacation, and he's not functioning, or he is fired from his job. Then the senses that he's supposed to control stop functioning, and without the senses functioning, nobody sees anything, and therefore there are no objects of sight. So you can't have object of sight without the demigod. In this way, in the absence of any of the three, neither of the other two can appear. Eka tarasya bhave, eka no pabalabha mahe. We don't perceive one without the other two. So therefore, none of those three can be the ashraya. This is helping us. We'll find out who the ashraya is by identifying all the things he's not and all the people he's not. Okay, continuing. Tatra tada tatritayam alochanatmakena pratyayena yoveda sakshitaya pashyati saparamatma ashrayaha. Teshamapi parasparam ashrayatvam astiti tadvyavachedartam visheshanam svashrayo anyashrayaha sachasav anyesham ashrayas cheti. Tatram sham shinos shuta jiva paramatmanur abedamsha swikarin ash aiva ashraya ukta. Okay, I can switch back. It won't sleep, you fixed it, okay. Okay, thank you. But he who sees all three by direct visual perception. That sounds like Dinabhandhu? No. Is it one of ours? Maybe not. But he who sees all three by direct visual perception, who knows them as their constant witness, is the super soul, the ashraya. The suggestion that each of the three is the ashraya of the others, so they're dependent. Let them share the work and be mutual ashrayas. This is denied by the qualifying term, the ashraya who is his own ashraya. They may be sheltering each other, but none of the three can shelter itself without help. He, the supersoul, is also the ashraya of all the others. In this description of the ashraya, we assume the partial non-difference of the pure jiva and the supersoul as part and whole. Okay, because you might understand these two verses as talking about the pure jiva. He's also, in a secondary sense, shelter, but he's not the supreme shelter. He knows the other two only to a very slight extent. He's not a complete knower, and he's not completely independent. But he's also, he's superior to the... No, that's not right. The jiva soul is the adhyatma purusha. And he's not really the shelter. So, okay, I see. I translated the sentence wrong. I have to fix it. What's really being said here that the jiva is called the ashraya in a secondary sense. To the extent that he's non-different from the supreme soul, he can also be called ashraya. And that's not how I translated it. I'm sorry, I had to fix it. I'm sorry? I can read you the sentence, but I haven't corrected it yet. I can't give you the correction. It's the last sentence in the translation of 61. Okay? It's translated wrong. The idea is supposed to be that the jiva can also be called ashraya in a secondary sense because he's partly non-different from the paramatma. But I haven't written it yet, so you can't copy it. You want to see it, you have to wait till the book comes out. Okay, so 60.2. Is that okay? I mean, is it okay to call the jiva ashraya in a sort of figurative sense? Yes, do you have a different idea?
Just the Abheda can be understood the way you said, but then how can we go the next step and understand that is why the Ashrayatva is told? The Abheda...
I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
The Abheda, as you said, as you explained, the jiva so is also in one sense the shelter or the knower of the other two, partially.
Yes.
So in that way we can, you said, figuratively understand the abheda amsha. You said that that's the way we understand the abheda amsha figuratively.
But how that's not what the sentence says. It doesn't say we can understand the abhedamsha. It says by accepting the abhedamsha between accepting the, by accepting the partial non-difference of the jiva and the and the shuddha jiva and the paramatma, not the conditioned jiva, but the shuddha jiva and the paramatma, the ashraya is described. Okay, I just have to work on the sentence.
It's not clear. Yeah.
Sorry. Sentence is a little mixed up. I have to work on it. Yeah, it doesn't say the jiva is called the ashraya. Anyway, check this sentence. Hare Krishna. I'll try to figure it out and explain it tomorrow, or next time I give a class, Sunday, I'll explain it. We just have to move on to 60.2. Atat paropi manute nartamiti. Ha, now we're talking about the jiva. So let's see how it's relevant. Atat paropi manute nartamiti. Jagat swapna sushuptam cha gunato buddhivrittayaha tasam vilakshano jiva sakshitvena vinishchitaha iti shuddho vichashte yavashuddha kartu iti adyuktasya sakshi samgyana shuddha jivashrayatvam nashankaniyam. Okay, now we're saying no, the jiva is not the ashraya. He's a witness. He is a witness of his body, but and its functions, but he's not the ashraya. First of all, he doesn't know the demigods. And second of all, he's not a complete knower of anything. And he's not independent. So let me translate that. It also makes no sense that to propose that the pure jiva, who is called the witness, is the ashraya. Okay, jiva is not the ashraya. This we know from statements such as these. Although transcendental, he considers himself a material product. Well, the ashraya can't be doing that, falling into maya. And statement, wake, full awareness, dreaming and deep sleep, all caused by the modes of material nature or functions of the mind. The individual soul has been ascertained to be distinct from these functions, for he is their witness. Okay, the individual soul is the witness of his own maya. In the state of being awake, being dreaming, and being in deep sleep. Well, if he was the ashraya, why is he in maya in the first place? Why is he witnessing illusion? So he can't be the ashraya. And the third statement, the pure one witnesses the actions of the impure agent, the mind. So why is the jiva watching his mind? You know, why does a devotee watch movies? Why, you know, why watch something that's illusory? The Paramatma has no such business watching illusions. But the pure one, the jiva, he's witnessing the impure agent, the mind. So he's not God, he's not the ashraya. Okay. Atava nanu, here's another Purvapaksha. Atava nanu, adhyatmika dinam apyashrayatvam astyeva. Satyam tatapi parasparashraya tvan na tatashraya ta kaivalyam iti te tu ashraya shabdina mukhyataya nochyante iti aha ekam. One might, okay, an alternate proposal is that the three purushas, the three persons, adhyatmika and so on, are all the ashraya. One might think like this, but because the three are mutual ashrayas of one another, none of them can be the exclusive ashraya. These three are not what is denoted by the primary meaning of the word ashraya.
You can say they're a kind of ashraya. They're mutual ashrayas. But that's not what the word ashraya primarily is supposed to mean. The primary meaning of the word ashraya indicated in the verse beginning, in the absence of any one of these. In that verse it says the one who knows all three is the ashraya and he's his own shelter. He's the shelter and his own shelter. So that can't be the three purushas. Okay, here's another Purva Paksha in 60.3. Tarhi sakshina eva astam ashrayatvam tatraha tritayamiti saatma sakshi jivas tu yak swashrayo ananyashraya paramatma se eva ashrayo yasya tata bhuta ityanayor bedaha vakshite cha hamsa guyastave sarvam puman veda gunamstatad gyo Naveda sarva gyam anantam ide iti tasmat abhasas chet yadi nokta paramat maiv ashraya iti Sri Shukaha. But then let the witnessing self be the ashraya. A last attempt by the opponents. This proposal is rejected in the words. The Supreme Lord is he who knows these three. Independent of all else, that Lord is his own support and the true ashraya. Well, I changed the translation to the Supreme Soul, so I have to change the translation here also when it's repeated. I don't have it in front of me what the change was, but I because the word Atma is used in the verse, Prabhupada's translation says Supreme Lord. But to follow the verse more literally, I'm changing that to Supreme Soul. Anyway, that's you'll see that when the book is printed. So that this quote, when the verse was translated, I made the change, so I make the change here also. Continuing, the witnessing self is the jiva, but the true ashraya is the super soul, who is his own ashraya as well as the ashraya of all others. Such is the difference between the super soul and all the others, as stated in the Hamsa Guya prayer. A person may know everything about the modes of nature, but still not know the all-knowing, unlimited Lord who I worship, whom I worship. That's spoken by Daksha. Therefore, the only true ashraya is the super soul, who is described in the verse, the Supreme One is the supreme source of the manifestation of the universe. Abhasas cha nirodas cha yatra. What is it? Adyavasiyate. Astyavasiyate. That from which comes and also is perceived. The abhasa and the niroda. The creation and the destruction of the universe. The source of that happening and the source of that being known is the ashraya, by definition. That's the definition given by Shukadeva Goswami previously in this chapter, 210, of the ashraya. Okay. That is the Anuchet. Now I'll read the commentary. The problem of correctly identifying the foundation of all existence is not a mere philosophical curiosity. On this question depends the very success or failure of human life. When otherwise intelligent persons fail to recognize their true shelter, they misdirect their lives to pursue imperfect goals. Many persons misidentify the Adi Bhautika Purusha, the material body, as the ashraya, and become materialists. Others worship the Adidaivaka in the form of various gods, unaware that these demigods are actually servants of the Supreme God. And others become impersonalists and worship themselves, the Jiva, the Adhyatmaka Purusha, as the Supreme. All such persons who make up the vast majority of the human race fail to realize the potential of human life. Only a few are interested in discovering the ultimate ashraya. They are the most rare and fortunate of souls, and they should be informed that the best source of guidance for their endeavor is Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's not just a trivial philosophical question about who's the real ashraya. There are people, most of the people in the world have decided wrong about who's the ashraya or what's the ashraya, the shelter of everything. The Marxists say that everything is based on money, an economy. And other people say everything's based on sense gratification. That's the ashraya. And everybody in the world practically has got some wrong idea about what the shelter of everything is. So this is a very important practical question. And the Bhagavatam is addressing this as a primary question that must be settled before anything else can be discussed. So this is the introductory presentation in the Tattva Sandarbha, to first of all identify the tattva. What is the supreme reality? Once we get a basic idea of that, then we can clarify it and make it more specific. That will be done in the other sandarbhas. But here we have to identify that only the Paramatma, the creator and supreme controller and knower of everything, is the actual underlying reality. This is monist philosophy. We're presuming that there is one underlying reality, that there's something coherent holding everything together. There's one basic principle of existence. You can deny that and say there is no underlying unifying principle, that all you have is things going on with nothing tying them all together. And you can, in your science, if you're interested in science, try to identify some patterns in existence, but not that you're going to find an ultimate purpose if you're denying that there is an ultimate one supreme reality. You may say there's many realities, many things going on, and we have many people, and each of them have their own subjective idea of reality, and it's whatever you want it to be or whatever you think it is, that's your reality. So you can deny the principle of monism, that there is one underlying reality, but then you're left in very, very muddy philosophical grounds. Then everything is more or less meaningless and chaotic. That's a basic presumption made, that there is an underlying reality. If we have to argue that, then we'd have to have another sandarbha before the tattva sandarbha. It's based on the assumption that there is a tattva, there is one underlying reality. And those who can't accept that, then we can't do much for them right now. All right, so maybe we can move ahead. For 61, okay. 61 is pretty long, but we can start it. Let's just get started on 61. Okay. We're going to look at the idea of ashraya again using a different set of 10 topics of the Bhagavatam given in the 12th canto by Suta Goswami. Slightly different list, but it also has the ashraya on it. Apashraya, he's called on this list. But that's not anything different. So our vishaya shlokas, the top verses under the discussion, are from the 12th canto, two verses. Asya Sri Bhagavatasya Mahapuranatva Vyanjaka Lakshanam Prakarantarena Chavadan Apitasyaiv Ashrayatvam Ahadvayena. By describing in another way the defining characteristics by which Srimad Bhagavatam is implied to be the greatest of Puranas, the following two verses also indicate that the Supersoul alone is the ashraya. Okay, I have a minor correction here. I have a footnote in the translation, but translations are supposed to... Oh, that's okay. Footnote is okay in the translation. Sorry. That's okay. Now the two verses. Sargo syata visargascha vritti rakshantaranicha vamsho vamshanu charitam samstahe turapashrayaha dashabir lakshanair yuktam puranam tadvido viduhu techid panchavidam brahman mahad alpa vyavastaya antarani manvantarani. The verses say, O Brahmana, authorities on the matter understand a Purana to contain 10 characteristic topics. The creation of this universe, the subsequent creation of worlds and beings, the maintenance of all living beings, their sustenance, the periods, the dynasties of great kings, the activities of such kings, annihilation, motivation, and the supreme shelter. Other scholars state that the great Puranas deal with these 10 topics, whereas lesser Puranas may deal with 5. Here, periods, antarani, means reigns of Manu, Manvantaras. Okay, I have a question. How is this list just different from Shukadev's list? Are the 10 topics exactly the same? Okay, what's different? Well, that's two different topics? The Vamsha and the Vamshanucharitam are two different topics here. Well, okay, but I think Vamshanucharitam, Isharangata was described as activities of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. So there's some overlapping. There's some overlapping between Ishanukata and Vamshanucharitam, right? Some overlapping at least, right? But here there's an extra topic, Vamsha. Okay, so, you know, Vamshanucharitam sort of corresponds to Ishanukata. It's not exactly the same thing, but there's some overlapping. The activities of devotees who happen to be in a Vamsha, who are kings in one of those two Vamshas, or in some Vamsha, in some other Purana, that's also Isha, it's a kind of Ishanukata. But then Vamsha, is just Vamsha, dynasties, is listed as a separate topic. It's not listed by Shukadev. So there's one extra one. Well, to come out with 10, there must be one missing also. Mukti's missing. Mukti's not listed separately. Of course, mukti can be defined as a kind of annihilation. So it could be covered that way. Yeah, so there we have Nirodha Vimukti, although actually you could just, because in the 12th canto, 4th chapter, it said that mukti is a kind of nirodha anyway. So you could strike mukti off the list and just merge it into nirodha and then add vamsha and then you get this list. They're just two different versions. Yes. Or Manvantara. No, but we have Antara listed here separately. Doesn't seem right, because Antara is already on this list. And that means Manvantara, according to Jiva Goswami. So Vamsha is not also going to be Manvantara. Okay, but this is Satya Narayan talking. Okay, anyway, but that's what I gave a different idea that mukti fits under annihilation. Samsta, so it's called samsta here instead of nirodha, but definitely the 4th chapter, the 12th canto, defines
one of the four kinds of annihilation as the living entity's individual liberation. The Bhagavatam does identify the two. I'm not denying this way, but there's a different way of explaining where is the mukti. The mukti is under samsta, I mean rather not samsta, under protection, raksha. Anyway, okay, but I'm not sure where he gets his list, where he gets his explanation from. Okay, I guess that's possible. Here's a commentary. I have a commentary for just this part of the Anucheda, 61.1. It says, in the current era, the authentic Puranas, especially the most important among them, are primary sources for understanding the meaning of the ancient Vedas. And so the greatest of the Puranas, the Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapurana, commands authority on its topics, of which the ultimate is the supreme shelter. Throughout the Bhagavatam, the Apashraya is identified as Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead. Okay, we'll continue on Sunday. I was planning on joining the Vajramandala Parikrama for a few hours on Saturday, and I hope to be back Saturday night if I can get back here. Otherwise, I may be late on Sunday, and I may have to postpone my class till I get back. I'll give it, but I may give it late. They're in Shergar tomorrow, Friday. And I guess they'll be marching from Shergar to maybe crossing the Jamuna or getting close to crossing the Jamuna on Saturday. On Saturday, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm asking someone in Delhi to find out exactly. They have a written schedule, but they don't exactly follow it all the time. Yes. When is Gopashtami? Okay, what are we supposed to do for Gopashtami? How do we celebrate? I don't even know how to. They're asking if about us or about the Parikrama? If they're observing it. I don't even know how it's observed. I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I'm trying to find out. Okay, we'll stop here. Yes?
Dharmada Gopalpa.
We have to make an announcement about what was it? Oh, that means that the RT itself should only last 15 minutes. Whoever's being the pujari, don't extend it, because it'll the whole Mangal RT, you do the Nishinga prayer, and Tulsi Puja should be over by 5. For that, the RT itself cannot go more than 15 minutes. Yeah. Sing the Shringa prayer only once, and Tulsi RT can be finished in 5 minutes.
And you don't have to. You just sing once, twice, Hare Krishna, Tulsi, Banam. But that's finished by 5.
Well, that's what we did this morning, but the RT was 20 minutes, and we finished by 5 after 5.
Okay, but it really should be finished by 5, otherwise devotees have difficulty with their japa if we don't finish it by 5. Okay,
so
work it out, yeah.
Also, the Mangal RT, the stanzas should be chanted once. The Nishinga prayers chanted once. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll remind you.
Is that okay? All right, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.